Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. Lots to chat about in the company of James O'Toole and Paul Curry. We'll assess where each club is at as the summer break arrives in the League of Ireland. Paul and James will be offering their grades for each team, so it'll be interesting to see how they mark up the various sides in the SSE Electricity League. Andrew Cheel is here as well on a second Champions League title for Chelsea. And what can Stephen Kenny get from the end-of-season games against Andorra and Hungary? But we're going to start with the Champions League final. And Paul Curry, you were on the podcast last week chatting away that we were going to be together at the weekend at Longford Town and Shamrock Rovers. And lo and behold, you weren't there. You were in Porto.
No, I was indeed, Adrian. And I know. I was very, very lucky. I was one of the fortunate ones who ended up with a ticket. And it was a difficult call to put through to yourself, Adrian, shortly after after the podcast to let you know that I wasn't going down to Longford. But as much as I am a fan of the League of Ireland, I think when the Champions League final comes round and your team's involved, it's a difficult one to turn down.
Because if people aren't already aware, Paul is a very devout Chelsea fan. I'll tell you what, Paul, let's relive the magical moment of the weekend.
Still evenly poised as Mount plays it through the middle to Havertz. Alisson comes out. Havertz has beaten him. Havertz scores for Chelsea. Thomas Tuchel's side are in front. And it's Kai Havertz, one of Tuchel's big calls to start the final. And it's Chelsea who are in front here in Porto. Manchester City 0, Chelsea 1.
Feel free to sing along there now, Paul.
I know. All I'm missing is a Superbock, Adrian.
Yeah, Superbock was your beer of choice, I gather. Is that why you're just a little hoarse this morning?
Do you know what? I'm not a huge drinker as it is, but I did enjoy a couple of Superbock. But I'm more hoarse from the game and the atmosphere, and the fact that Chelsea were hanging on for pretty much the whole second half has left my voice. I think I've left some of it in the stadium, but it was a really good occasion.
Yeah, we'll come on to the match in just a moment, and Andrew Cheel is also with us. He joins us from London. But as an occasion, what was it like? Because obviously there were spectators there, you were amongst them. So what was it like in terms of the atmosphere?
Yeah, it was really good to be back, Adrian, and back amongst fans and an atmosphere and inside a stadium that had, I think it was in around 14,000 people. So on that side of things, it was great. It was kind of like my first taste of normality and what we were like pre-COVID. And then from an occasion point of view and how they ran at Porto, it's a beautiful city. Everything was set up really well from outside the ground to inside the ground. And It's probably a little easier, I think, being in the ground at times because you're able to to soak things up than it is watching on the telly. And just when you see those elite players playing on such a big platform of a Champions League final, is something. Having been a player and being able to watch it is something that I really enjoyed. And you see the levels of these guys and the pressure they're able to play under and their first touch and their technique. Everything is so refined. And it's a magnificent occasion. I think it was actually my first Champions League game I'd ever been to. So from the Champions League music coming on at the start and the trophy presentation, it was just a class day out.
Yeah, great. No, it sounds great. Now to the match itself, Andrew Cheel, what did you make of it?
I thought Chelsea won it on and off the field. I thought they got it right, absolutely right tactically. And from right from the off, I think they were chasing down the City players and closing down space in a way that few teams have managed in the past. And that really, I thought from quite early on that Chelsea looked as if they were going to win it. And even though City started well, for me, it was N'Golo Kante has always been the heartbeat of that team. I've often seen him likened to Claude Makélélé, but he was always getting a foot in and playing a simple pass and keeping possession. I wasn't surprised that Chelsea won. They looked like they really, really wanted it from the outset.
James, one of the big talking points before and obviously post-match, because hindsight is brilliant, centred around Pep Guardiola's team selection and the fact that he didn't go for a midfield anchor, no Fernandinho or Rodri. And obviously he's regarded, we spoke about it last week on the podcast about how highly regarded and rightly so that he is, his reputation, you know, it's worldwide because of what he's achieved. Did he blink in terms of his team selection? Did he get it wrong?
I think that's what Andrew's kind of talking about there. I think the lack of Fernandinho in the middle of the park kind of gave Chelsea an anchor into to the game. And they went after it. They realised he wasn't going to be there, so they just chased, as Andrew said, chased people and space down. So kind of nullified any threat from him. I think, over as we mentioned it last week, over the last couple of months, Tuchel has definitely had Pep's card on this, the way he set out his team. But let's not underestimate, Pep has changed football in England, no question. Like, I've seen something yesterday being quoted of someone once said to the, if you're on top of football, it's time for you to change the way you're doing stuff. So as you stay there, and he's constantly done it. And yes, he's lost out in this Champions League, but it was their first final, Man City's first final, Chelsea's second win. And unlike Paul, who was able to soak up the atmosphere in the ground and around Porto on the day of the match, I had to listen to it through one of my neighbours who's just as big a Chelsea fan as Paul. So we were able to hear every single scream of every single kick that went on during the 90-odd minutes. But it's great if you're a fan of the club, especially if you're at the final. The finals are brilliant. I've been to a couple and they're just brilliant atmospheres to be at.
Yeah, Andrew, what about the Pep situation? Because people have accused him before of maybe overthinking his team selection and then perhaps trying to be too clever. Did he overcomplicate things by going with such an attacking and bold lineup?
Yeah, I think he probably did. When you go for such an attacking lineup and you leave out people, the kind of people that we've been talking about there, Fernandinho particularly, it leaves you with a big hole in the middle of your team, and it asks questions. I wonder what the players' reaction was when they saw when he announced his team to the players, you know, because they're so used to playing with that holding midfielder. Maybe they were looking around in the dressing room beforehand saying, well, how are we going to cope with this?
Obviously, N'Golo Kante, as Andrew mentioned there, Paul, was absolutely imperious. Being there and watching him, how special was that?
Yeah, I mean, it beggars belief the amount of ground that he's able to cover. And like his reading of the game, his energy, having been a centre midfielder, it's almost tiring watching him covering the ground because he's literally here, there and everywhere. And when you're going up against Man City, you really need that, because when you're sitting in so deep and you recover the ball, you actually then need somebody who can carry it up the pitch for you. And he's deceptively good at doing that too. So from a defensive point of view, from even a transition point of view of trying to get yourselves up the pitch when you've been defending for so long, he's so vital. And when you've got Jorginho in there, who's very instrumental in kind of keeping the play ticking over and reading the game, he's not blessed with legs, he's not blessed with energy, so he's to have Kante there to complement that gives you a really good combination in the middle of the pitch. But he's just such a humble guy, you know, when you see him from the World Cup to celebrating the Champions League last night, he almost looks uncomfortable when he's brought in front of cameras or the trophy's put in his hands. And he's just a really good character to have, I'd say, in that squad, and somebody who you know on a weekly basis is going to give you at a minimum a 7 out of 10. And as a manager, that's you know, invaluable to have within your squad.
He is actually a bit deceptive when you look at him, really, because as you said, he's a good at defence. But his centre of balance and his movement when he has the ball at his feet. And I've seen a couple of clips, especially when the preview of the Champions League mag, they did a piece on him. And they showed some play from in the semi-final, I think it was. And the ball bounces up around his hip, but he controls it straight away, and then he's off. He's off and running. And somebody like that, I don't know if you noticed on the night, Paul, it's different watching him live when you're high up in the stand compared to cameras and stuff like that. But his balance and his foresight, it's crazy. Absolutely. I don't think I've seen anybody like him. Since you, of course, Paul, at UCD maybe. But I don't think I've seen
That's it. He's a very low centre of gravity. And he's probably one of them who's very, very difficult to actually mark and get at. But he just, when there's a break and Chelsea looked as if they were in a bit of danger, I remember kind of early on in the second half, he had like a sweeping tackle on Phil Foden. And as a City player, you just must be wondering when he's going to come at you, or what direction he's going to come at you, because he's just always there when there seems to be a bit of danger. He seems to sniff it out really well. But I was just chatting to one of my mates after the game, and I was saying, it's such a it's such a peculiar kind of rise up through the ranks that he's had, and he was very unknown in his early and mid-20s, and then over the last kind of 5, 6, 7 years, from Leicester winning the league, to winning the league with Chelsea, to winning the World Cup with France, won the Europa League, and now he's won the Champions League. It's hard to kind of mirror that with any other player who's been so unknown for the early stages of career, and then just to accelerate through the leagues and the ranks. I find it really, really interesting kind of career to follow.
James, the loss for Manchester City of De Bruyne was obviously a big blow, and at that point you kind of felt it just wasn't going to happen for them, but his departure diminished their chances, didn't it?
Yeah, he's been a super player since he arrived for Man City. He's been absolutely wonderful. But, you know, if you've got a head injury or anything like that, there's nothing you can particularly do about a player. He looked a bit groggy. Hopefully it's not a long-term kind of thing, because we've got the Euros obviously coming up. It'd be great to see him playing at full fitness. But, yeah, if you've decided to go out with the squad you have, if that's the 11 people you're putting on the pitch and then one of them is gone, it just, as Andrew said as well, like if you're sitting in the changing room with the guys and you realise that your defensive midfielder is not going to be there and you're going to be up against Chelsea, and then when that happens on the pitch as well, it kind of lessens your attack, lessens your ability to defend, and again, heads in a final just go sometimes.
Andrew, you're immersed in the London football scene. I'm sure right across London there was great delight and joy for Chelsea's success. But a penny for the thoughts, I would imagine, of Frank Lampard, because the media in England seemed to have a great soft spot for Frank Lampard, and there was a natural outpouring when he got the chop. Thomas Tuchel has arrived in, sacked by PSG at Christmas time, and he's achieved almost an extraordinary thing in winning the Champions League for a second time for Chelsea. But Frank Lampard in this story, what's your view on all of what happened over the last 6 or 7 months?
I think Frank Lampard has a lot of credit with the media in London, in particularly, because he's played his entire career in London, and he's such a nice guy, and he does really good interviews. I've spoken to him on numerous occasions from right when he was a youngster, and he's one of those rare things, rare beings in football. He tries to answer your question, which is a radio reporter is brilliant. It doesn't very often happen. He's such a nice guy, and I think it was a shame that he didn't get it as right as he should have done in order to avoid getting the sack, because that's what you get these days. You know, the owners and managers and chairmen of football clubs are so impatient for success that even if you've got all that, you know, credibility with Chelsea, you know, because he's got blue blood in his veins, basically, he's Frank Lampard, you've got all that, it makes no difference. You still get the sack, and that's such a shame, because I thought he was an absolutely perfect fit for the job.
Yeah, on a personal level, Paul, for Frank Lampard watching on, it must be so crushing watching the team that he was manager of, his, you know, the team that he loves, the team that he enjoyed so much success with as a player, and a few months after he gets the chop, Chelsea lift the Champions League. It can't have been easy viewing for him, I imagine.
No. I mean, winning the Champions League and getting top four kind of justifies Roman's decision to change it in the first place. But it must be very difficult. I mean, he can take pride in the fact that, you know, particularly when you look to Mason Mount, who he had at Derby and who he brought through with Chelsea, he's given Reece James a chance. He's obviously signed the likes of your Chilwells and your Havertz and your Werner. So in one sense, he's got it right with the personnel that he brought into the club and that he brought through the ranks. And he can take pride that he's had, I guess, his fingerprints on that trophy in one way, shape or form. But I think when you look to two players in particular who were pretty impressive, Jorginho and Rudiger, he had a bit of a falling out with, and he didn't really fancy Rudiger, and Jorginho came out in the press after the sacking and said Frank wasn't quite ready. When you see the transformation in those two players in particular, as much as I love Frank Lampard and as much as he was one of my boyhood heroes, it does make me think maybe you do need somebody with a bit more experience who's been around to put a system and a structure in place to get your players into in order to get the most out of them. And in particular, Rudiger, I thought, was absolutely excellent. That block, I think if Phil Foden scores, that could be a completely different game. and Jorginho as well. He doesn't look as exposed as he did under Lampard. He really gets the team playing well. But there's definitely a sense of pride that Lampard can take in the fact that they won the trophy.
Yeah. And just a word, Andrew, on Chelsea now, because obviously having won the Champions League, and it's a super achievement for Thomas Tuchel. But obviously next year, you know, the pressure will be on. But the Premier League title now has to be the goal for Chelsea. Do you see them really challenging Manchester City and Liverpool? You'd have to expect so.
Yeah, I think maybe they will. I think if they need anything, I think they need a new striker, to somebody who can score lots of goals for them, if they're going to really challenge, because they missed a lot of chances on Saturday, and they've done it several times just recently. A new striker, and yes, definitely. I wonder if there's an argument that whoever gets Harry Kane gets the title next season.
What's the speculation in London? I mean, obviously, you read the papers, and you could, you know, name any club, be it Real Madrid, Barcelona, United, City, Chelsea, whatever you're having yourself. Have you any gut instinct on where Harry Kane might end up, or could he end up staying at Tottenham?
It wouldn't surprise me if he stayed at Tottenham, but if he's going anywhere, I think it'll be City. I think they've got the money, they've got their recent record of winning trophies is what will persuade Harry Kane to go there rather than anywhere else. And I think they've got the money, and they've got the record. And I think if Harry Kane wants to make something bigger from his career than he has so far, because he hasn't got very many trophies, if any, then City is the place to go.
Yeah, James, we cannot move away from the Champions League, which we're about to do, without mentioning Mystic Meg there, Mystic Curry, who several weeks ago predicted Chelsea would win the Champions League. He came on this podcast and he was absolutely having none of it. He said Chelsea will win. Well, he didn't quite put it like that, but let's give him some credit, eh?
I suppose we have to, yeah. I think it was the round of 16 when they eventually got out of the group stage, and he's like, who's going to win it? Chelsea. No question, Chelsea. I have an inkling feeling it's Chelsea, he says, nonchalantly. And then, you know, we have to give him credit for that. We do. It'd be tough to do it, but we'll have to give some credit to him.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was it, Paul? What gave you that inkling that, you know, at that point that they, you know, that they had something about them to go on and win it?
I think it was shortly after Tuchel had come in, and I always think with Champions League and those knockout occasions, when you're keeping so many clean sheets, you keep yourselves in games, and Chelsea were doing that. And they looked really solid with Thiago Silva, Azpilicueta, Christensen, Rudiger, that kind of bases, and then with Mendy behind, I thought they're just going to be in games. And also then I always think that Chelsea, albeit they sometimes need too many chances to score a goal, when you've got legs, and I touched on this last week, when you've got the likes of a Werner, a Havertz and a Mount, and they're able to get in behind European teams who like to dominate the ball, or the likes of Man City, that's really punishing. And once you go ahead in those games and you're keeping clean sheets, there's a belief amongst the squad. And I just thought that was kind of a good recipe to have heading into those Champions League ties. Let's not like beat around the bush. The draw was very favourable. They had Porto and they had Real Madrid. They beat Atletico as well, but La Liga is not as strong as it has been in previous years. So they had a decent little route to the final. And then once they got there, and the fact they'd beaten City twice in the league, I think Tuchel got his tactics nailed on. It was just one of them where I thought it was a good fit. And I wish I had it backed it, because I definitely didn't, and I probably would have got good odds on it.
Okay. Well, listen, well done to Chelsea. Andrew, a new name in the Premier League next season, Brentford. You were there at the Championship playoff decider at Wembley. Talk to us about Brentford.
Brentford, I think, are a club that are going to have to invest in players seriously if they stand any chance of staying up. The problem is they've got a new stadium to play at to pay for as well. I think they may well be like clubs like West Bromwich Albion, Norwich City, etc., who have refused point blank to speculate with money that they haven't got yet. I suspect it will be the same with the three clubs that have come up. The good news for Brentford is that they will have at least one more season watching Ivan Toney. I saw him on Saturday. He looks a real prospect. He looks a class act. I think if they had not been promoted, there would have been a very strong possibility that Ivan Toney would have left the club and got snapped up by one of the lower to mid-table Premier League outfits. But as I say, investing in players, they need to strengthen their squad, but they also have a new stadium to pay for as well. It's a tough balancing act for the manager and the chairman.
Yeah. Brentford in the top flight for the first time in 74 years. And James, you have a bit of a soft spot for them.
Yeah, I like Brentford. Brentford are it's a kind of a crazy club, to say the truth. Like, as we were just speaking off air, no under-23s, just a B team. There's always been some form of Irish contingent there. Like, at the minute, Alex Gilbert is there as a player. But, of course, the assistant manager as well is Irish as well. So, Michael O'Connor, excuse me, he's been there for years. I think he was Brentford's top player. I think he's played more games for Brentford than anybody else. And he's in the management team now. They're an odd club, it has to be said. The way they play and the way they produce players, that seems to be the way they go about it. But under Thomas Frank, they've just missed out last year, I think it was. And it's great to see them come up. But as we've already said, like, they've got the smallest capacity stadium. So money's going to have to be made somewhere else. And not just football coming in through the gates. And hopefully they get a good season and they stay up. But it's a great story for the Bees, it has to be said.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done to Brentford, who'll play in the Premier League. Andrew Cheel, many thanks for joining us. How are you going to spend your summer?
I am going to spend a quiet summer for the main, but the highlight of it will be my cricket club's tour of North Devon. We've been going there for 35 years, so we know where all the best pubs are.
Well, you enjoy.
Thank you.
I don't know if they serve Super Bock, but I'm sure, I'm sure they have something similar. So, many thanks as always, Andrew. Maybe we'll chat over the summer. We shall see. Lads, Stephen Kenny, he's got the Irish squad gathered together. They have a couple of friendlies coming up. Andorra on Thursday, Hungary on Tuesday of next week. But a lot of absentees, Paul. So what do you think Stephen Kenny will hope to get out of these two friendly matches?
Two wins. is that the easiest way of putting it?
That would be good.
It's a tricky time of year with obviously players finishing up their league campaigns, and sometimes the last thing, particularly the more experienced ones, want to do is go away on international duty. They just want to put the legs up. So it's difficult in that sense that Stephen needs to kind of get them going again and has to, I guess, freshen minds up that this is actually an important little campaign that they have. It's time together where Stephen can maybe put a bit of a more of a mark on the team and how he wants to play. But we can talk about tactics and styles of play, but we actually desperately need to start seeing wins on the board. And the Andorra game, you would like to think, is going to be one where he'll get the first win. And then the Hungary one, I still just get a little worried about. I'm not convinced at the moment when we go into these games that we're going to get results. So if we could get two wins from those two games, it'd be great. And then if you could start to maybe blood in and start to see maybe one or two of the younger players come through and do quite well, I think Stephen will bite your hand off of that.
That has to be the hope, isn't it, James? Two wins and maybe one or two players to emerge. A lot of untested players in the squad, a lot of notable absentees, but the likes of Seamus Coleman has travelled. Now, how much a part he plays, because, of course, he picked up a bit of a knock towards the end of the Premier League season. But what are your hopes and expectations out of these two games?
I'm a bit with you there, Adrian. I want goals. I want to see a goal that isn't scored by a defender in a set piece. I think Andorra is the one we need to go out and nail. I think it'd be interesting to see if Jamie McGrath gets a run out, which you would hope he is, because he's probably one of the top form goal scorers we have at the minute. And also, I'd like to see Chidozie Abogie get a run out as well, because I think his pace will hurt most teams. Like, we've seen him at Limerick, we've seen him at Cork City. He's done really well since he went over to England. But I think his pace is something that we need. We need that kind of difference instead of a laboured kind of winger or anything like that. He'll get at people, he'll create chances. But it'd be good to see some of these young kids like getting on the score sheet, hopefully. And they are kids, in fairness. This is probably the youngest squad we've had in a long time playing in any friendly. But just get that first win under his belt, and then we'll see how we get on after that.
Okay, then, let's round up the action from the SSE Electricity League Premier Division over the course of the weekend. Finn Harps 1, Sligo Rovers 2. Sligo Rovers top of the table. They lead Shamrock Rovers by a point. Sligo went in front through Romeo Parks early on at Finn Park on Friday evening. Tunde Oalabi equalised shortly afterwards for the Harps. Lewis Banks scored in the second half, a fine volley. And then Sligo had to hang on for the last half an hour or so after Parks was red carded. Let's hear from both managers, Ollie Horgan, coming up very shortly. But first, Sligo's Liam Buckley.
Well, in fairness to the boys, it's testament to the amount of work they've put in from a pre-season point of view and all the previous games. They're all working extremely hard. We're still not at our best, I feel like you would see today. We've scrapped out a result. We've had a few of those over the last few weeks, a few months, should I say. That said, you know, I'm happy with the effort and drive that they're bringing to the party here. And it needs everyone to put in a shift every week. And if they do, we'll have a bit of fun with the season.
We didn't defend our corner kicks. They did. They defended our attacking corners. We didn't defend theirs. And they're fine margins, but that's why they're top of the table and that's why we are where we are. We didn't take our chances in the first half. But, you know, it was always going to be tight, except the disappointing part of us is that we didn't defend the two goals, so two corner kicks. Sligo probably didn't have as many chances as we had, but when you're up there, you know, and you can see why they're up there. They defended properly, and you saw it McGinty with the save they made when they were down to 10 men, and that's why they're up there, and it's not by fluke that they're here.
There you go, that's Ollie Horgan. Well, at Bishopsgate, it ended Longford 10-0, Shamrock Rovers 1. So the Hoops just a point behind Sligo Rovers. The only goal came from Rory Gaffney in the 95th minute. Really dramatic conclusion. In a moment, Darragh Doyle, but first the Hoops manager, a somewhat relieved Stephen Bradley.
The players have been brilliant for the best part of 2 years. We had a bad night against Sligo and we just had to go again. And they've done that. I think the performance today was very, very good. And you get the rewards, but it's a big 3 points. We enjoy our break now and we focus on Finn Harps when we come back.
It's a really sick feeling to the pit of my stomach when you lose a game in that manner. I think you look at the performance from our group today and the work that they put in and the effort and the quality in some of our play as well has been really, really, it's been there. You know, I can't say anyone can say that Shamrock Rovers deserve to win that game. They've scored a winner again in the 95th plus minute, and you know, from our group I can't ask for more than them. They've given absolutely everything they have, and I just feel sick, to be honest.
That's the Longford Town manager, Darragh Doyle. Well, on now to Richmond Park, where it finished St Pat's 0, Dundalk 2. A rather unfortunate own goal from Sam Bone and David McMillan, the scorers for Dundalk. Very shortly, we'll hear from Alan Matthews of St Pat's. But first, the Dundalk sporting director, Jim McGilton.
Just a fantastic team display, carried out the game plan to perfection. You know, we gave St Pat's their due respect, their quality side, quality coaching staff, and we had to be patient. We had to be show great concentration, and we played on the counter today and it worked, but that was largely down to the work rate and the application and attitude of the players. I thought they were outstanding.
Yeah, very disappointed with the result, obviously. As you said, we enjoyed an awful lot of possession, but really when you look at it, I suppose their intensity in the last third just wasn't right this evening, just weren't there. And you give credit to Dundalk, they came and they probably had maybe 3 attempts on goal and got 2 goals. We look at it from our own end of it and think, could we have gone better defensively? Game is about scoring, and you can have all the possession stats you want. It's about putting the ball in the back of the net, and unfortunately, we probably didn't have that sharpness of play and quickness around the last third to create opportunities. They got some good blocks in fairness, but overall, despite the possession, we probably didn't have that cutting edge.
That's Alan Matthews. Well, Drogheda United were going great guns, but they came a cropper on Friday night, losing at home 2-1 to Derry City. Both goals for Derry from Will Patching. Let's hear from Tim Clancy, but first the winning manager, Derry's Rory Higgins.
Yeah, absolutely delighted. The players are in really good form, great spirit in the group, and nothing surprised with them at the minute. We're coming to difficult venues and picking up really good results, which is great for us.
We wanted to go to the break on a positive result and try and get another point on the board and keep the run going, but listen, we'll give us a week to recharge the batteries. I thought we looked a bit leggy there today. I think possibly the injuries that we have had and whatnot probably took its toll on the games in quick succession in the last couple of weeks, and we'll certainly enjoy the break now to recharge the batteries.
That's a clearly disappointed Tim Clancy of Drogheda United. At Derrymount Park on Saturday, it ended Bohemians 3, Waterford 0, Dawson Devoy, Andy Lyons and Ross Tierney with the goals. In a moment, Waterford's Mark Burcham, But first, the Bows main man, Keith Long.
We've won well. We've kept a clean sheet. We scored 3 goals. Possibly could have got a goal or two more. I thought the performance, we got after the game well. You know, they contained and they tried to, the tactic was to get bodies behind the ball and to try and, you know, contain and hit us on the counter-attack. And I thought we managed the game quite well. We moved the ball quite well and we created some opportunities and our patience was rewarded before half-time with two goals. So to go in half-time at 2-0, it was something similar last week. We against Dundalk going in 2-0 up, you know, the message was to try and, you know, get the next game, next goal if we possibly could, and we did that. So we're pleased to come away to win before the mid-season break.
Their attitude is great. They want to, it's a young squad, they want to work, they want to listen, and it's the mentality though. We got to change it. We're bottom of the league for a reason, and they're good players. So for one reason or another, they've been dragged down, and I've got to try and break that, and this break couldn't come at a better time for us.
There you go, that's Mark Burcham, the Waterford manager, clearly frustrated. Right then, lads, we're going to grade the various clubs in the SSE Airtricity League. You can give them, we'll go with the old marking system. Is that okay, James? A, B, C, D, and E, with A being like super, 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 B being very, very good, red hot, C being, yeah, going nicely, D being, yeah, okay, and E obviously being a bit of a fail. Is that okay? You're with me on this? Yeah, okay. Come on, back of the class there. I can't hear anybody. Right.
Well, you're trying to do this exercise with Sligo top of the league, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, let's start, Paul. You give us a grade for Sligo Rovers. Liam Buckley's Sligo Rovers, 1 point clear at the top of the table. How would you grade them so far?
I think you'd have to give him an A. I think the recruitment's been really good. He's got them playing good football. The results are particularly impressive. 5 wins in the last 5 league games. It's hard to say anything wrong about Sligo.
And what would you give them, James?
Yeah, I think you have to go A as well. If you remember when Liam first went in, I think he was only about 8 games in and people were already calling for his head. But he's just done what Liam Buckley does, and he's just put together a good quality squad with some really, really good, mature professionals in there, with the likes of Buckley at the back, and you know, it's just really, really good. Yeah, definitely, they're far exceeding what we thought they could have done.
Okay, I was going to give them a B, but I'm swayed by you two, so A it is for top spot. Shamrock Rovers, Paul, your old club, how would you mark them?
Yeah, probably a B minus, Adrian. I just think they've you know, they've obviously brought in a number of players, and that takes time to gel. And when you're replacing Jack Byrne and Aaron McAneff, you've obviously got big boots to fill. So that you can kind of give them a bit of leeway on. But they've flattered to deceive me in certain games. And I think they've gotten away with one or two results when they've scored late on. I think there's definitely more to come from them, and there's a lot of improvement within the squad and the performances, whereby you'd like to see them exert a bit more control and dominate games a bit more going forward. The introduction of Richie Tell is going to be interesting, and I think if they can get that right, I would expect Shamrock Rovers to kind of nip out in front of Sligo and go from there. But to date, it's been a bit of a mixed bag from them.
James, their capacity, and we saw it again at the weekend, their capacity to get late goals is remarkable, isn't it?
It's absolutely mental. I think they've taken, is it 10 points in the last 2 minutes of a game? And into injury time, that's how many they've got. And I think that's why they get a B+ for me, is that they've just continued going and going and going. And to the very end, like, it was 96th minute the other day against Longford. And in fairness, they didn't really create a lot in that game. They probably had one or two chances on goal, one in the first 13 seconds. And then that was the first half over. But yeah, they've been really well, and that's, I keep on saying, it's a sign of champions if you're scoring those late goals.
Yeah, they really had to grind it out at Bishopsgate at the weekend. St. Pat's in third, obviously beaten by Dundalk at the weekend. They head into the summer break, lying in third position. They're 6 points down on Sligo Rovers. What's your grading for Stevie O'Donnell, St. Patrick's Athletic, Paul?
A high B anyway. I think, you know, they started the season very well.
Look, you're just playing puck now with the grading system. You're B minus, B plus, B this, C. You're confusing.
I wasn't
now.
Sure.
You never told me if we were working off leaving cert. Like, are we doing B1s and B2s, or are we doing pass and 2-1s and 2-2s? You didn't set the ground rules here, Adrian.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go on ahead.
I'd say a B. It's probably maybe been a bit harsh on Stevie as well, because they started the season really well and they had a bit of ground to make up on the back of last year. And I think the squad that he's putting together, he's certainly heading in the right direction. I always compare the job that he's doing at St. Pat's to one that Stephen Bradley had at Shamrock Rovers. He's just probably 2 years behind him there. And they're only maybe two or three extra players away from really pushing on and challenging. But what he's getting out of the current squad, and even bringing the likes of a Ben McCormack through, he's certainly on the right direction. And if they can add a few more players to that squad, well, then they're going to be in with a chance. So a high B.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. James, what's your view?
I'll give them a B, but I'd go low B, because I think their inconsistency is starting to hit them again. Like, when you think they're just getting on a roll, they hit a couple of speed bumps as they go. I think if they can sort that out, I think they could well push to maybe a higher B, but at the minute they're just touching a B for me.
Yeah. Well, what are the issues as you see them for Pats?
I think lack of goals coming from around the pitch. Like, it's just, like, they've never really had an out-and-out striker since Christy Fagan, and they've never, the likes of a Christy Fagan is very, very hard to come by. We understand that, but they've also had goals come from midfield, a lot of goals come from midfield, and that seems to be lacking. And then, I don't know, there just seems to be, maybe it's the run of games, three games in a week and stuff like that, they just don't seem to be hitting top form in each game. And that might be just because there's so many games already this season.
Okay. Drogheda in fourth, it's a definite B. I think they've been terrific this season, one of the surprise packets in the league. What's your marking system on Drogheda United, Tim Clancy's side, Paul?
I'm going with an A. I think given, wow, you know, the resources that Tim Clancy has to deploy there and the people that he's brought in, I think he's got a really good blend of players who played in the first division and bringing in the likes of a Gary Deegan and so on, who have experience of playing in the Premier Division. I think he's got it spot on. Yeah, and I think if Tim continues with that form and the team continues to produce, I don't think he's going to be a Drogheda too much longer, because one of the full-time clubs, if there's a vacancy there, he's got to be top of many people's lists. And I'm so surprised about how well they've done this season. I'm really delighted for Tim up there.
James?
I'm definitely an A on this as well. I think they've been absolutely excellent. I think the way he's changed tactics, depending on who he's played against, has been wonderful. If it wasn't for a couple of goalkeeping errors the other night against Derry, they could well have come out with a draw on it. And again, like Longford did against Shamrock Rovers, they really, really pinned Shamrock Rovers back, and Rovers needed again a 92nd minute goal to win that game. So yeah, I think they're definitely A. What Tim's done is been wonderful.
Bohemians are 11 points behind the leaders, Sligo Rovers, but they've been on an upward curve of late. So therefore, I'm going to give them a C, but in a couple of weeks' time, I'd imagine I'd be giving them a B. But Paul, what are you going to give them?
Oh, I'm torn on this one. I tend to get battered by Bows fans as well, so I need to be careful.
You can't let that colour your judgment now, Paul. You have to be honest.
You're not on the receiving end of some of the tweets. It's easy for you to say. I'll go with a B. I'll go with a B purely on the basis of the last few weeks. I think they've finally started to click and they've started to get it right. They've obviously changed the top three from last year. That's going to take time in order to start seeing the rewards of that. I think Georgie's starting to come good as well and starting to take some of the chances that he's been presented, and that's certainly seen a change in their form. So I think given that they've won four of their last five, I think that's a B, and they're one that are definitely look out for in the second half of the season, see how far they can push on.
Okay, A, B, C, D, E. James, what letter are you giving
them? Adrian, I'm a C on this. I think they've flattered and deceived. I remember Ollie Horgan said a couple of weeks ago that they'll give somebody a battering, and in fairness, they've given three batterings in a row now. But I think they could be doing better. Certain games they've absolutely clicked, and other games they haven't, and that's why they're getting a C.
Yeah, Finharps should have got something against Sligo Rovers, arguably, on Friday night. They're on 18 points, mid-table. I'm going to give them a C. Terrific start, but the wheels have come off in recent weeks, a little bit inconsistent. Paul, your marking?
Geez, you're awful harsh, Adrian. You're a difficult grader, you are.
Yeah.
I'd probably go with B. I think there's improvements there in last year and the last couple of years, whereby they've always seemed to be down around the bottom and fighting it out, and I don't see that happening this year. So for me, that's progress. I don't think they're ever going to be one that's going to be competing up the top of the table. So given that the hand that he has, I'd give Ali a B.
Yep, that's fair enough, James.
I'm with you, Ado. See, he started off really, really well, but it's kind of slipped back a bit. Yeah, on the other night, they should have probably got something out of the Sligo Rovers game, but when the Sligo went down to 10 men, they didn't really make enough of it. And it's small things like that that will stop them gaining points. So for me, it's a C. Great start, but as I said, falling off a little bit now.
Okay. Dundalk, I'm going to give the first D here. It arguably could be an E, but I'd give them a D. Dundalk. Paul, what will you give them?
I'm not far off an E here, or an NG. You know, this is...
We forgot about that, yeah. The NG, the good old NG, yeah.
I think, like, if you were to look at Dundalk's wage bill and get under the bonnet of how much money they're spending on wages for the players and the squad that they have there, the results, first and foremost, are not good enough. Then everything else that's happened between the change of management that needed to happen, the fact that they haven't filled that vacancy yet. There's a lot of kind of confusion off the pitch as well. The season just couldn't have been much worse for them. Now, they have showed a bit of a turnaround in the last couple of weeks, but consistency isn't there. And when you've got players of that quality and when you're dishing out that much money, you need to be seeing better. So I'm well down on probably an E there.
Okay, James?
I'm with Paul, and when I was going to school, there was an F as well, if you remember, but I'd be close to that. I think they've been really, really poor. A certain amount of this has to go to the players on the pitch as well. Like, they haven't done their job from years. Like, one of the coaches with us on the GAA team is a Dundalk fan, and he mentioned to me yesterday, he said, 2 years ago, I was supporting the best team in Ireland, the best team in Ireland that we've ever seen, and now I'm supporting one of the worst. So that's the change around from a fan's point of view as well as from everybody else's point of view. I think they played one or two good games, they played well against Shamrock Rovers, but apart from that, they haven't really hit the ground running.
Okay. James, I'm going to roll it back to you because it's your team next, Derry City.
I'm going to give maybe a C. Maybe a C. I was contemplating a D there because of the start of the season, but since Rory's come in, they've really started motoring. They start getting points on the board in games where they may not have a C at the moment, but it could actually go up a bit if they can get their home form nailed down. I think the pitch in the Brandywell isn't helping them, but they need to get their home form nailed down to push out from where they are right now.
Yeah. Paul, on Derry?
Probably a C. I've not seen a whole lot of them. I actually think Will Patching's been excellent since he's gone in there, and he's somebody that you can build the team around. But purely on the basis of where they're sitting within the league, Derry should be higher up, and they should be competing much higher up for European positions. Now, Rory's gone in, he's obviously changed it around, but basing it off the first 14 games, it's between a C and a D for me.
Yeah, I'll give them a C. Longford Town, I'll give them a D. Very honest. They graft and they were so unlucky at the weekend. James, what are you going to give Dara Doyle's Longford?
I'd give them a D as well. I think there's a certain amount of maturity they need to have to see out results, and that seems to be lacking at the minute. And hopefully it's something Dara can work on over this little break before we come back in after the mid-season break. As I said, the other night they were fighting off scraps, small little bits and pieces they had. But you just have to keep on playing for 96, 97 minutes in this league. And if you don't, you end up on the back of results. And it's happened far too many times this season.
Paulo?
Yeah, I find it hard to be overly critical of Dara Doyle and what he's done there, because he's done a fantastic job. But the results just haven't been there. They actually started the season quite well, but I think they've started to fade, and it could be a grim second half of the season for them.
Unfortunately, I have to give an E to Waterford. It's been a bit of a shambles so far this season. New manager coming in. We wish him the very best of luck, but Waterford propping up the division. James, what are you giving Waterford?
An E, negative, as it were. It just seems to be an absolute shambles down there at the moment. Mark Burcham even mentioned his interview today, like half an hour before games, not knowing who he can play because they've had so much of the COVID testing and negative testing and positive testing happening. Managers disappearing. It just seems a bit of a farce at the moment. So that's what they're getting that grade from me.
Waterford, Paul?
Yeah, bang on. I think James hits the nail on the head there with an E, and they really need to get some structure both on and off the pitch if they're to have any chance of kind of putting any sort of form together. They have tended to throw a few players into the mix kind of June, July, maybe some players who've been released from the UK or who've been looked to be loaned out. So if they can do that might give them a bit of a hope, but a bit of an almighty mess down there at the moment.
So there you go. That's the Premier Division, and the lads and myself with our grades. I'm sure others would have different perspectives. But anyway, on to the First Division and a check on the results over the course of the weekend. Treaty United 2-0 winners over Bray Wanderers. A very good win for Treaty. Athlone Town 2, UCD 3. Students going very nicely indeed. Cabinteely 0, Wexford 2. We had Ian Ryan, the new Wexford manager, on the podcast a couple of weeks back, so he's got his first win as manager. Robinson and Doherty with the goals. Cove Ramblers beat Cork City 1-0 in the big Munster derby. Shells with a very comprehensive win over Galway United by 4-0. In the SSE Airtricity Women's National League, Shelburne 0, Wexford Youths 0, so Shells slipping up, Piemont taking advantage. They beat Galway by 4-0. Claire Walsh, Della Doherty, and 2 for Eleanor Ryan Doyle. Athlone Town 2, Bohemians 3, and a big win for DLR Waves at Jackman Park over Treaty United by 5-0. James, the First Division, Shelburne really setting the pace at the moment. The Students hot on their heels, but there's a danger in the First Division that Shells could pull away, isn't there?
There's a danger of that, all right, but we've seen over the last couple of years, Adrian, how tight the First Division generally finishes, despite teams being way ahead. If you remember this time last year, Cabinteely were streets ahead of absolutely everybody at this stage and were clawed back. But Shells, you'd expect them to push on, keep going, and probably come straight back to the Premier Division at the first time of answering. But a great result for Cove over the weekend, beating Cork, as you mentioned. The scenes after that game were absolutely wonderful. It's great to see that. Great to see Wexford getting wins. Now that everybody's starting to get wins, the league will light up from here on, and I expect this to be very, very tight up until the last 2, maybe 3 weeks of the season.
Paul, what are your thoughts on the First Division and how it's played out so far?
Yeah, listen, Adrian, I fully expected Shelburne to be where they are, sitting top of the league. And I think given the players that they've brought in, they should have no problems seeing themselves back to the Premier Division and should win the league, I think, quite comfortably. From there, it's as James has kind of alluded to, it's a complicated old league. UCD have done really well so far to date, and I think given the crop of players that they have in there, particularly with Colin Whelan banging in goals, they've every chance of staying up around the top end of the table, and it can just be one of those where it's very difficult to call. I probably didn't expect Galway, given how well they finished the season last year, to be sitting down in 7th, and I think it's a bit sad then that Cork are down in 8th, but given how tight the league is, if you put a run together, you give yourself every chance of making those playoffs.
Okay, the under-21s, the Irish under-21s, beaten on Sunday by Switzerland by 2-0. Before we wrap things up, lads, fans, we will have fans back, limited numbers obviously, a trial test event with fans at the Shamrock Rovers Finn Harps game after the summer break, and Cork City against Cabinteely at Turner's Cross will also have some fans in. It's going to be great, James, isn't it, to have fans back in the grounds, albeit in limited numbers initially?
It'd be absolutely wonderful to have them back. I don't know exactly the details of how this is going to work yet. Are tests needed pre-matches and tests needed a couple of days after the match or anything like that? But as we mentioned, Andrew was at the playoff final in Wembley yesterday or on Saturday. And with 12,000 fans there, he was saying how much noise they brought. So it'd be great to just have some form of noise at the matches. There's been fans outside the grounds, and even the small numbers outside the grounds who start cheering and chatting, you can hear a bit of atmosphere building. So this is the first steps of what hopefully will be the return to full stadiums.
Yeah, and Paul, as somebody who was at the Champions League final, the difference fans at a venue can make, you know, you just cannot underestimate it.
No, you can't, and it brings an energy and it brings a tempo to the game, and then from a fan's perspective, it's great to be back in and amongst, and you kind of forget when we went into lockdown initially the impact that it has on games. So the sooner we can get them back into our League of Ireland grounds and start helping our clubs again, the better.
All right, listen, lads, we'll leave it there. As always, many thanks and well done, Paul, on predicting the... By the way, who's going to win the SSE or Tristy League, seen as you're our Mystic Meg?
I'll go Shamrock Rovers, Adrian.
Shamrock Rovers, yeah. James, Shamrock Rovers?
Yeah, Shamrock Rovers.
Okay. We'll hold you to that now. It'll be interesting to see. Anyway, listen, lads, we'll chat again soon. So to Paul Corrie and James O'Toole from me, Adrian Eames, until the next time, from all of us, bye-bye.